Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.
Good morning. I'm Angela Davis, and you're listening to NPR News. So glad you could join us today. When you look in the mirror at your smile, what do you see? Do you see straight white teeth perfected by years of braces and retainers? Or are your teeth a little crooked? Do you have some gaps, maybe a few missing teeth? What our teeth look like can say a lot about class, wealth, and beauty standards in the United States. Their appearance often plays a role in how we are judged by others. So this hour, I want to talk about who can and cannot access oral health care in our country and why Americans are so obsessed with perfect pearly whites. I want to hear from you. How do you feel about your teeth? Do you have regular visits to the dentist right now? Did you have those when you were growing up? Was your family able to afford braces and other cosmetic procedures? Or was dental care simply too expensive? How do you feel about going to the dentist now? You can call us this hour at 651-227-6000. Again, that is 651-227-6000. Or call 800-242-2828. You can also tweet me at Angela Davis, NPR. Later the hour, I'll talk with two dentists about the state of dental care here in Minnesota. But first, I want to talk more about access to oral health care across the country and how Americans became so obsessed with the idea of that perfect smile. Joining me right now to talk about that is Mary Otto. Mary is a health journalist and the author of the book Teeth, The Story of Beauty, Inequality, and the Struggle for Oral Health in America. She's joining us from Washington, D.C. this morning. Hi, Mary.
Good morning, Angela. How are you?
I'm well. I love the title of your book, Teeth. It starts with a very gripping story, the story of 12-year-old Diamante Driver. Tell everyone who he was.
Oh, well, I was working as a reporter at the Washington Post on the Metro staff back in 2007 when I met Diamante, 12-year-old Diamante Driver, and his mom, Elise Driver. And unfortunately, it turned out Diamante was dying of complications from a dental abscess, basically a decayed molar that had gotten infected, and the infection had spread to his brain. The mom and the son were in Children's Hospital here in Washington. Mrs. Driver told me she'd been looking for care for Diamante's younger brother, who was complaining about his teeth when Diamante came home from school one day with this headache. And his grandma took him to a little community hospital, and he was diagnosed with an abscessed tooth and a sinus infection. And he got some medicine and went home. But a couple days later, he was much worse. And his mom took him to a larger local hospital where doctors realized he had meningitis. This infection had spread to his brain. And when I met Mrs. Driver and Diamante, he was fighting for his life. But unfortunately, that was a battle he lost. You know, due to something as simple and as treatable as tooth decay, his story, you know, when it ran in the newspaper, did spur calls for reform and attention to the lack of access to care for hundreds of thousands of local children who are covered by Medicaid, you know, which is this program that covers millions of low-income Americans across the country. And it turned out millions of Medicaid children across the country had not received routine dental care that they are entitled to by law. So in congressional hearings, you know, demands for accountability and better performance by states were, you know, made. And in the state of Maryland, some important reforms were made to the Medicaid dental care system for children to make sure that children were getting, you know, the care that they are entitled to by law under the Medicaid program. But serious disparities, you know, have been historic and continue, you know, although some progress has been made in recent years. Children and adults, low-income children and adults.
I understand now why you wrote this book. You're still very, you know, rattled by this because, you know, I don't know if people really understand, like, when you don't take care of your teeth, the health risk that you put yourself, that you make yourself vulnerable to, because these bacterial infections can cause many other medical problems. But again, it's often this access to dental care. Can you tell us more about, like, why is dental care separate from medical care here in our country?
Well, that's an interesting story, too. And it turned out this story unfolded in Maryland over 100 years ago, in 1840, as I learned. Dentists in Baltimore, these two men who were self-trained like all dentists were back in that era, they learned their skills from a, you know, more experienced practitioner under an apprenticeship system that dates back to the Middle Ages, really. They trained themselves, but they were also men of science and deep inquiring minds. And they had studied books and writings from Europe where dental work was more elevated on a scientific level. And they went to the physicians at the College of Medicine in Baltimore and suggested that they add a course of dental training to the medical classes there. You know, they'd unfortunately seen a lot of deaths and suffering from sepsis, like Diamante experienced, in those days before antibiotics, terrible deaths and pain were quite common. But the physicians, as the story goes, told the dentist that the subject of dentistry was of little interest and sent them away. And that event is still remembered as the creation story of professional dentistry in America. It's remembered as a historic rebuff. Well, these two men, Chapin Harris and Horace Hayden, wouldn't take no for an answer. They started what is still remembered as the world's first dental college. And it's in Baltimore now. It's part of the University of Maryland. They wrote dental textbooks. They established a curriculum, a professional society for formally trained dentists, a peer-reviewed scientific journal for the study of dentistry. Other dental colleges were set up around the country. And to this day, we have separate training for our dental providers and our medical providers. We have separate places we often usually look for our dental care. We have our dental records, and our medical records are almost always kept separately, and separate coding languages are used. Of course, our insurance and our healthcare benefits, as are reflected in federal and private benefit programs, are separate for dental and medical procedures. So there's this disconnect. I mean, our heads are attached to our bodies, right, but our healthcare system doesn't reflect this at all.
A disconnect or just a mess. I'm not sure how you would describe it. Mary, we're getting a lot of phone calls already from some of our listeners. So I want to take some of those as you and I continue to talk about just the history of dental care and this issue of access. So again, we're talking about our teeth and what our teeth say about us and dental care. And what is it like for you to go to the dentist or try to get to a dentist, and how are you able to pay for it? Call us at 651-227-6000 or 800-242-2828. Right now, let's go to Little Canada and take a phone call from Kevin, who's on the line. Good morning, Kevin. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. Thank you.
Hi. What did you want to tell us?
Basically, I'm in the process of trying to find a dentist. Mm-hmm. I have Delta Dental, the state insurance, and nobody takes that. I've got five teeth pulled in my life because they won't do crowns. They just started to do crowns a couple years ago, but then nobody takes the dental plan. I paid out of pocket to try and get dental work because my teeth are fairly bad. As a disabled veteran, I think that's kind of an insult. Your guess was right. You know, it is totally separate from medical and everything. You know, mm-hmm. dental has its own thing, and it's impossible to find a dentist if you're on the state insurance. Mm-hmm. There are places that do work, but they're booked until November.
Right. Well, Kevin, stay with us. Thank you for calling. And Mary, let's talk about insurance and, again, just the availability of dentists. We know that there are these dental professional shortage areas across the U.S., that 60 million people in our country live in places where there's just a lack of professionals to do the work. But what can you tell us first about what Kevin is encountering with his state insurance?
Well, you know, he's speaking for a lot of Medicaid dental beneficiaries across the country. And I mentioned that children, although they don't always receive the care that they're entitled to under law, under Medicaid, you know, because of the shortage of dental providers, adults, the program treats adult dental benefits as optional to states. Every state has its own approach to providing dental benefits to low-income adults under its Medicaid program, and there are often shortages. The last time I checked, far fewer than half of dentists across the country accepted Medicaid. And Minnesota has its challenges like every other state. From what I've read, and you'll probably have experts on the show later in the hour who will talk about this, the state's been revamping its policies on getting dental care to Medicaid beneficiaries in ways that might help Kevin, but his problems are not unique and very challenging.
And yes, he talked about having teeth removed because he's not able to get crowns. And so there is a stigma associated with people who have so-called bad teeth. And have you found in your research and working on your book stories from people who talk about discrimination and prejudice because they have quote unquote bad teeth?
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's funny, but I think part of it is because of the divide. We tend to treat dental problems as a kind of moral or symbol of moral failing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like something you should be able to take care of, you know, and if you don't, there's something lacking in you.
Right.
But, you know, as Dr. David Satcher, the Surgeon General, reminded us in this landmark Oral Health in America report back in 2000, oral health is part of overall health. And the cosmetic signs of, you know, poor oral health are should be considered a healthcare issue, you know. The stigma
It's real, right?
Yes, it's real. It's real. The American Dental Association found in a poll a few years ago that roughly a third of low-income Americans are ashamed to smile because they're ashamed of how their teeth look.
As we look at these areas of the dental professional shortage areas, places where there just aren't enough, like dentists or dental hygienists, no one to help. Do they tend to be in rural areas, or where are these places?
Well, they can be, and they're often in rural places like Minnesota. I've been to the state and traveled, you know, talked to patients who traveled hundreds of miles to visit mm-hmm. a dentist there. But, you know, maybe not surprisingly, they're also in many urban areas, which are, you know, in high density, lower income communities. Often minority communities suffer far greater shortages of care. Our dental workforce is not as diverse as our country. And our dental system is still basically a private practice, fee-for-service system. Dentists tend to set up their practices in more affluent metropolitan areas that, you know, promise a better return on the investment that they've made in their education and their staff and their equipment. So, you know, community health centers, which are the safety net clinics of our country, have been stepping up to the plate more, especially in recent years since with the Affordable Care Act. Many of them have started adding a dental professional to their staff, whether it's a dental hygienist or dental therapist in some states like Minnesota where they're allowed, mm-hmm. which is a mid-level kind of a nurse practitioner type of dental provider or a dentist. So slowly, this shortage of care is being acknowledged and recognized and addressed, but it's very painful for patients like Kevin who are
seeking care,
for basic care.
Right. Looking for it. Mm-hmm. Right. Let's take more phone calls, Mary. In Stillwater, we have Tara on the line. Good morning, Tara.
Good morning. Thank you so much for doing this. And Mary, I'm excited to read your book because everything that you've been saying is are issues that we've been attempting to work on in Minnesota for a long time. I'm a healthcare lobbyist. I mainly work with safety net providers, vulnerable populations, disabled communities. And I represent three large safety net providers, Hennepin County Medical Center, Apple Tree Dental, and Community Dental Care. They all do over about 85 to 90% Medicaid. And Mary is right that there are thousands of people on their wait list just to get basic oral health services. And I think some of the things that she just said are absolutely what is happening is that there is really not a lot of integration. And it's really a lot about also just workforce. There's been a lot of pushback to do the mid-levels. Luckily, Minnesota does have a mid-level program here. It's something like a nurse practitioner. But there was a lot of pushback for that. There's been a lot of pushback for dental hygienists to be able to go into communities and do preventive health care and preventive services, whether it's in community settings like schools.
Tara, what do you mean when you Tara, what do you mean when you say there's pushback? They're not welcomed, or they're a method to do it is not easy to create?
There is. We made a couple of changes last year for dental hygiene. There's a program called Collaborative Practice that is around the country. But, you know, there's always barriers, whether it is hygienists are not able to actually become currently right now in Minnesota, they cannot bill for their services within a community setting unless they form a nonprofit. And there are some amazing groups doing that work. But there's just been a lot of barriers for that to be expanded. And there's a lot of folks who would absolutely go into community settings, into schools. And I really think that that's going to be the wave to get children, especially in schools, to be able to receive healthcare and to get those dental services. It's convenient for the parents.
Tara.
All right. And they are there.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Tara. Again, people are seeking help. They want access to a dentist to get this work taken care of. And Mary, I want to turn to a stat here. One-third of white children and almost one-half of Black and Latino children don't have access to dental care. The children, one-third of white children, one-half of Black children, one-half of Latino children don't have access to dental care. Let's talk about racial disparities and who can access dental care in the U.S. and who's not able to. Mary?
Yeah, that's such a good point. I'm so glad you brought it up, Angela, because, you know, the lack of care in childhood can set the stage for a lifetime of pain
Absolutely.
And suffering, you know, for us. Not only are disparities in access to care, but 18% of white preschoolers have cavities, 28% of Black preschoolers have cavities, and 33% of Mexican American children have cavities. So poorer kids are twice as likely to have untreated dental decay. And those disparities, you know, follow us into our later years where, you know, we're more likely to have lost all our teeth if we're African American seniors, you know. That lack of care, you know, can set the stage for social stigma, as you pointed out, just difficulties with basic functions that keep us healthy, like being able to eat and talk and
feel confident.
Feel confident, you know. So, how we're viewed in the world too, fairly or unfairly, unfairly. But yes, you're right. It's a huge issue. And again, it goes back to what Tara just said about access to care, you know. prevention is so important, and workers like dental hygienists can go into schools and provide fluoride varnishes to a whole classroom full of children, or timely sealants on teeth to protect those newly emerged molars and protect them from decay. So there's a lot of prevention work that could be done in a very cost-effective way if our system accommodated that differently. And every state has its dental practice acts that can restrict access to care in community settings. And I think Tara was alluding to that.
Right. Mary, while we still have you with us, I want to take another phone call. This one's coming from Fort Myers, Florida. We've got Mark on the phone. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning. How are you today?
Okay. What did you want to tell us about your teeth?
Well, so, I am not considered low income, but I still haven't been able to afford what I need to be done on my teeth. Mm-hmm. The company that I work for, they provide this very minimal help with your, but it's just, just outpriced.
Are you unhappy with the way your teeth look, Mark?
I have to have, probably two back teeth replaced, and other bills are just more important at the moment.
Are you unhappy with the way your teeth look, Mark?
Well, in the front, they're okay. But it's mainly the teeth that are in the back. So I'm okay with how they look. I'm 57 years old, but I also heard that your teeth affect things like your heart and stuff like that. Is there any truth to that?
So Mark is asking about, again, what we talked about, just the other health risks that come along with not taking care of your teeth, Mary.
Mm-hmm. It's a really good point. It's because of the institutional divide between our oral health care system and our health medical care system, research on some of those issues is still way behind where it should be. Researchers are starting to understand the two-way relationship between gum disease, periodontal disease, and diabetes. They're the inflammatory response systems that kind of inform both of those chronic illnesses. We're farther behind in understanding what kind of relationship there is between heart disease, complicated, cardiopulmonary conditions, and oral health. Research needs to continue on those in those fields. You do see studies that give you glimpses and ideas about that, but we still don't fully understand what those connections are, what those relationships are. The National Institutes of Health is stepping up its attention to understanding more about how oral health fits into our systemic health.
Mm. All right. Well, Mary, we're going to dig deeper in these questions about our health, the tie between dental health and overall medical health with two dentists after our news break. But I know that you have to leave right now. Thank you for sharing the time that you have with us to talk about teeth. Again, we've been talking with Mary Otto, a health journalist and the author of the book, Teeth, The Story of Beauty, Inequality, and the Struggle for Oral Health in America. Thank you, Mary, for your time.
Angela, thank you so much for paying attention to this important topic.
I have two dentists joining me right now. Here in Minnesota, we've got Dr. Carl Self with us on the line. Dr. Self is an associate professor at the University of Minnesota School of Dentistry, where he is the director of the Division of Dental Therapy and the interim associate dean of academic affairs. His research focuses on access to dental care. Hi, Dr. Self. Thank you for your time.
Good morning, Angela. Thank you for having me on.
And also we have with us Dr. Prashida Kanal. She is with the Minnesota Department of Health, where she is the state's oral health director. Good morning to you, Dr. Kanal.
Good morning, Angela. Thank you for having me in your show this morning.
So in the first half hour, we were hearing from a healthcare journalist. Her name is Mary Otto, and she talked about her book and also about the fact that we have 60 million people in this country who live in these dental professional shortage areas. So just not enough professionals able to do the work that is needed. And so first, Dr. Kanal, can we talk about what do we know about, like what happens when we don't take care of our teeth and how it can lead to other health problems?
Angela, thank you for that question, because I think that's what Mary Otto was trying to reiterate.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So I think we already heard from Mary Otto that, you know, the biggest barrier in our in the current state is that we treat mouth separately from rest of the body, right? And mm-hmm. I do think that oral care is excluded from medicine's education system, physician networks, medical records, and payment systems. But then the teeth don't know that they're supposed to keep their problems confined to the mouth. So getting back to your question, mm-hmm. what happens next, right? What happens next is that poor oral health increases risk for adverse pregnancy consequences, and it puts a person at higher risk for diabetes and heart disease. And think about our residents in rural Minnesota. There's already shortage of dental providers there. So then there's a lot of oral systemic linkages going on, but just because our communities may not understand, you know, the linkages, it's so important for us to increase their oral health literacy about how oral health is part of your general health, right? And also going back to DeMonte Driver's story, where we talk about those conditions in which people are born, they grow, they live, they work and age. And really, I think I did hear a lot of callers talking about, you know, like having to lose their teeth and not being able to get the crown. But I think my focus is if we are able to shift our mindset of, if we are able to trade in their treatment mindset for a prevention mindset for dental care, I think it would help us overcome a lot of these barriers that we've been talking since the beginning of the interview. Mm-hmm. And I feel like maybe we can move towards that direction where we are thinking about addressing a lot of health disparities that our colors have been, you know, sharing with us, and something that we see so prominently here in Minnesota. So maybe moving upstream and thinking about oral hygiene care, the home oral care that you do, right? Brushing, flossing. 99% of our dental disease is preventable. And maybe we need to focus more on that arena, because we already know that in Minnesota, 55% or maybe let's say more than 50% of our counties are already short of dental providers. So we have to move upstream if we want to change this course down the lane.
And Dr. Self, I'm sure there's a lot that there is for you to talk about. But first, you know, what comes to mind when you hear people talk about, like, I want to go to the dentist. I've tried to go. I can't get there. I can't get the care that I need. What have you discovered about access to dental care here in Minnesota?
Well, you know, access to dental care is a problem nationwide, and we always talk about Minnesota having one of the best healthcare systems in the world, and we do better than many other states. But that doesn't mean that our citizens don't have problems accessing dental care. True, not everyone. There's a number of folks in suburban areas and in many cities and even in some rural areas that have no problem accessing dental care on a regular basis. But we do know that when you go around the state and you talk to people and you talk to dentists, our access to care issues are throughout the state. Rural areas may have some more access issues than the urban areas. But we find that patients, as was noted by an earlier caller, who especially are on government programs, can wait months and months before they can get an appointment for care. So it truly is an issue. You know, they have something called unmet healthcare needs, and that is an actual disease that needs to be treated. And when you look at all of the areas of healthcare, dentistry has the greatest unmet healthcare needs of any of the professions nationally and in the state of Minnesota.
And what about some of the insurance issues that we've heard about? You know, what is access to dental care like for Minnesotans who are on public insurance?
Yeah, the folks who are on public insurance really do have a challenge. You know, some statistics have been done, and you can always quibble over the numbers. But, you know, there was a survey that showed that when you look at children with private dental insurance, 71% had a preventive visit of some sort. And when you look at those on a government program, only 43% had a visit of some sort in a given year. And so it is a huge challenge. And we really need to do a better job of getting care to the people who need that kind of care.
And Dr. Canole, access is an issue, but also fear. People don't like going to the dentist. Or if you've had a painful experience or bad experience, you may not ever go again. What can you tell us about what you've seen and learned about the fears and anxiety that comes with, sometimes in a patient's mind when getting dental work done?
Mm-hmm. And dental anxiety and fear is a frequently encountered problem in dental offices. And I think that if I am a patient, there could be multiple reasons. It could be that I fear judgment and pain, something that you were also talking about, right? So it is a perception that if I have a decay in my tooth or my teeth are yellow, somehow it's a perception that dentists might judge you for not taking care of your teeth. I think Mary Otto also touched on that a little bit. There are also stigma associated with certain kind of health conditions that patients would tend to feel that they may be treated differently by a provider. I also have found in literature talks about how lack of understanding that dental procedures are painless. There could be some previous traumatic experiences. So also hearing negative experiences or stories from your peers or family members. And sometimes, just the sight of the needles and also the sound of drilling and sometimes the smell of dental materials in the dental clinic are all related to fear. But one example that comes to my mind is how a pregnant person might be fearful to see a dentist because she's very concerned about the safety of her unborn baby, which is a very legitimate concern for a mom to be, right? Mm-hmm. So even though seeing a dentist is absolutely safe and essential during the pregnancy, I think it's just because our communities may not have knowledge about the importance of seeing the dentist. So my recommendation is that if there's anyone who's fearful of seeing a dentist, first seek help, ask a family member or a friend to help you make that call to a dental appointment for a dental appointment and talk to your providers. Like dental care team, you have to trust them and they are here to support you and they will absolutely create a comfortable environment for anyone who is fearful.
Are they trained? Is that part of the training to teach people about, what a patient may be feeling or thinking when they come to the dentist to address that dental fear?
I think as part of our dental training, behavioral management and also how I think it's just natural part of our training. Mm-hmm. So I am sure that all dental teams are trained and they are excellent in taking care of patient needs, whether it's fear, anxiety or any other needs that our patients have. So I think the answer is yes, they are absolutely trained to do that.
Dr. Self, anything you would add to that? Have you had some experiences with people who are just the smell, the lights, all of it? Like, no.
Well, the first thing to appreciate is that dental care is a really intimate experience.
Yes.
We have hands, instruments, and oftentimes two sets of hands working in somebody's mouth. We are very close in distance, face to face. And for a lot of people, that kind of intimacy can create anxiety. So absolutely, it's important that dentists are trained in that. And here at the University of Minnesota School of Dentistry, we do teach people how to work with patients who have fear, how to help put people at ease. What are some of the things that can trigger emotional responses from people?
And can it truly be painless, some of the procedures?
Oh,
I'm skeptical
absolutely.
Of that. Painless? Completely? Tell me.
Absolutely. Anyone who has actually practiced dentistry can tell you story after story of people who come in who are very fearful. And as you're talking with them and you're explaining what you're doing and you do things, and then all of a sudden you say you're done, and the person kind of goes, huh, I didn't even know you were doing anything. And so dentistry nowadays can be managed very painlessly in most cases. Obviously, people who come in pain, people who have more complex things, that can generate some discomfort. But dentistry has come a long ways.
All right. Let's take some phone calls from listeners as we talk with two dentists here in Minnesota about dental care, access to dental care, and some of the stigma associated with having bad teeth. Give us a call at 651-227-6000. In Richfield, I want to take a call from, is it Jocelyn? Is that right? Am I saying
it? It is.
Hi, good morning, yep. Jocelyn. Thank you for waiting. What did you want to share with us?
So about 6.5 years ago, I was hit by a drunk driver and I broke my jaw and had a whole lot of dental trauma after that. I'm still dealing with it now. That fear of going to the dentist, the fear of the sounds, the fear of what are they going to find next. Mm-hmm. When I broke my jaw, they were concerned that you might need a bunch of root canals. It might be 2 weeks from now or 20 years from now. So that fear is in the back of my head as well. I'm still following up with TMJ dentists, and everybody has been so great, and they have been so kind and gentle with me about my fear and anxiety about having my mouth open for extended periods mm-hmm. of time. But I'm very curious about the gentle dentistry. I looked into it once, and it was really expensive. I'm wondering what kind of options there are for gentle dentistry or things to put my mind at ease when I have to go to the dentist. I'm a lot better about it now, and we're teaching our kids that, oh, brushing your teeth is fun. Going to the dentist is fun. You get stuff from them. You get a new toothbrush and everything. But what kind of options are there for people who have that dental trauma?
Okay. Dr. Cadall, I'll have you weigh in on this again. And I'm not even familiar with the term of gentle dentistry. Dr. Cadall, anything you would say to Jocelyn there?
So I think, again, I'm very impressed that that you've been able to have positive experience with whatever you've been through. So I really appreciate your confidence in our dental team. All I can say is I think it's all about communication and trust that we have in our providers. The more you let them know, they are there to reassure you, to help you get situated with your emotions, and they are there to make you feel more comfortable. Mm-hmm. So the only way out is you have to trust your provider and talk to them about how you're feeling, and they will validate your concern. They will validate your emotions and make sure that you continue to have those pleasant dental experiences with them.
All right, let's go to Renville to take a phone call from Corey, who's on the line. Good morning, Corey. Thank you for calling in and for waiting. What did you want to share with us about going to the dentist?
Thank you. Can you hear me okay?
I can.
Okay, awesome. Well, I'm 27 now. I've been on public insurance my whole life, low-income white family. And growing up, I had some trauma at the dentist, as did my sister. I could actually hear her screaming from the lobby. And that gave me a lot of anxiety to this day, going to the dentist. They actually wanted to break her jaw and rewire it shut. And we never did that because we didn't have the money. And then in the pandemic, I got my wisdom teeth coming in last year, and I had to call 13 different dentists because either they weren't taking new patients or they weren't taking new patients with medical assistance. And now I have to drive an hour to the dentist in Hutchinson, which is actually, to add on to what Jocelyn said, they're called gentle dentistry. So that's cool. And my big question is, why aren't dentists open on the weekends? Because you have to take time off of work or mm-hmm. school to go in there, mm-hmm. which just isn't always an option with low-income families. Right. Like, why don't they have a rotating staff for the weekends?
Yeah. All right, Corey, let's talk to both of our guests about this. And first of all, let's talk about insurance. It's one of the things that she's asking about. According to the Pew Research Center, only about a third of U.S. dentists accept public insurance like Medicaid or the Children's Health Insurance Program. In Minnesota, people with low incomes can also access the state-funded insurance Minnesota Care. First, to you, Dr. Self, what can you say to Corey in just like trying to find someone who's going to take the insurance that she has to get the work she needs done?
Yes, absolutely. That is a challenge. And, you know, you have to look back historically on some of this and the fact that government programs have historically not kept up with reimbursement of the procedures to the point where The amount that they paid for a procedure in many cases didn't cover the cost of providing that care. And that's a big reason why dentists chose not to accept government programs. Now, there's a lot of changes that have been made, and recently there's been additional funding put into government programs, and that will be helpful. But I think the insurance piece and coupled with the hours piece is the fact that we have a shortage of dentists in a lot of areas, and that difficulty in finding a dentist, period, makes it even more challenging for finding one who will accept a government program. And that's one of the benefits of the new programs in Minnesota, one of them being having dental therapists as a part of the oral health care team, because dental therapists can help provide care at a lower cost to that office, which makes it more sustainable for an office to accept government program patients.
Okay, tell me more about dental therapists, because that's a new term for me. What is a dental therapist, and how does that person differ from a dentist or maybe a hygienist?
Absolutely. Well, a dental therapist is what we call a primary care dental practitioner. They do work under the supervision of a licensed dentist. They are part of the oral health care team, much like a physician assistant or a nurse practitioner. While dental therapy is relatively new in the United States, it started in Alaska in about 2005 in tribal communities. Minnesota has passed a law in 2009 that has authorized the practice of dental therapy in certain communities where they primarily serve low-income, uninsured, underserved patients, or they practice in a dental health professional shortage area. So by statute, they serve underserved patients, and they can provide a wide variety of basic care. They do preventive care. They can do some
like cleanings and fillings and crowns,
like cleanings and sealants, and that and adding fluoride. They do fillings, or what we call restorative care, and that's, you know, the basic bread and butter historically of dentistry, whether they're the tooth-colored fillings or the silver fillings that go in people's mouth. They do very minor surgical.
So that can help in these shortage areas. We have this war-trained professionals who can do the work.
Absolutely. And there's been studies done that would suggest that a dental therapist can perform somewhere in the neighborhood of 70% of the care that somebody needs, you know, for basic dentistry. And the value of that, specifically in rural areas, is if you can get somebody to do that basic level of care, it frees up the dentist to do that higher level of care. Mm-hmm. So they can do the root canals, they can do the crowns, instead of having to refer all of that stuff out. And, you know, just like other industries, when you spend a lot of time doing one thing, like doing the fillings, or a lot of our dental therapists focus on kids, and they are very good at managing kids and behaviors, issues. But you get really good at that, you get fast at that, and that increases the efficiencies of the office, so many of them are actually able to add more patients as well.
Dr. Kunal, I want to hear from you. You're at the health department. What are you hearing about dental insurance and some of the problems that people are encountering and just, you know, widening what services people can get?
Right. And Angela, I wanted to validate our caller's concerns, because as you might know already, that one in four Minnesotans get their health coverage through medical assistance and Minnesota Care, which is known as Minnesota Healthcare Programs, right? And even though we understand that there are many barriers to care, recently Governor Walz in Minnesota legislature put teeth into the state's ability to improve these dental health disparities with an historic 2021 dental package. In plain language, what it means is that dentists who serve Minnesotans on medical assistance and Minnesota Care can now expect higher reimbursement rates, simpler payment structures and fewer administrative burdens, so which means that with the new legislative changes in place, our dentists can really, it's a great time for dental providers to reconsider serving patients who are on medical assistance and see them more often in their practice. So hopefully efforts like this are kind of, you know, important for meeting our immediate needs. And longer term, we are working towards a dental home model, especially Department of Human Services is taking a lot of important role in moving towards a dental home model, which aims to improve oral health by providing regular source of care to vulnerable populations. So as a state, we do understand that there are more than 50% of our counties already have shortage of providers. And our hope is to be able to not just work with patients who already have dental disease, but also maybe to think about moving upstream where you're working with community members so they come to the dental chair, but this time for preventive care. So there is like lots of these, you know, good policy changes happening. But because I work for Department of Health, I would need to make sure that there's more information.
But it's good. I'm glad you brought that up. That, yes, in 2021, we did see state lawmakers, they passed a dental care legislation that will address some of these disparities we're seeing in who can access care. And so it really speaks to, you know, just recognition, like this is a problem we have to find some solutions to. Before we run out of time, I want to take one more phone call. And on the line right now, we have Dr. Amber Chuck. And Doctor, I understand that you're the president of the Minnesota Dental Association.
I am. Thank you for having me, Angela.
Hi. So tell us, as we close, like, what do you want people to know about what help is out there and what your organization is doing?
Yeah. So at the Minnesota Dental Association, we represent about 70% of Minnesota dentists. And we have been working with the State Department and the university to increase access of care statewide for patients, not only on the state programs, but just patients in general, as far as placing more dentists in rural areas, increasing funding for those state programs so that more dentists will accept the programs to try to get these patients care. And really, we acknowledge the disparity in healthcare access for a lot of dental patients and really want to do our best to treat all citizens of Minnesota.
All right. So, and in closing, Dr. Self, what do you want people to know about not sitting and waiting and looking at the calendar, but maybe being moved to action to go see a dentist?
Well, I think that old adage, you know, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Dental issues never get better on their own. Once a cavity starts, it only gets bigger. Once gum disease starts, it only gets worse. And so really, find somebody who, you know, you are comfortable with, somebody who will listen to you and somebody that you can take your family to and make it a dental home where it's consistent care, much like on the medical side.
Find our dental home. I like that.
You want a dental home.
All right. Our time is up, but it sounds like we should revisit this again. Thank you to all of our guests and our callers who all shared your stories about dental care. We've been talking with Dr. Carl Self, an associate professor at the University of Minnesota School of Dentistry, as well as Dr. Prashita Kanal from the Minnesota Department of Health, where she is our state oral health director. Earlier, we heard from health journalist Mary Otto, and the title of Mary's book is Teeth, the Story of Beauty, Inequality, and the Struggle for Oral Health in America. Today's conversation was produced by Samantha Matsumoto and Matt Alvarez. Be safe, everybody. We'll talk again tomorrow morning at 9. Thanks for listening to a recording of my live radio show on NPR News. A reminder that if you want to catch my show in real time, tune in and call in weekdays at 9 a.m.